Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here talking story every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And you may listen to the podcast of this and any other Island Issues interview at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. We live in a state where many of us are in the sun, whether we're on land or water, and we use sunscreen to protect us from sun damage, wrinkles and such, and more importantly, protect us from true harm, skin cancers, whether less bad like basal cell carcinomas or really bad such as melanoma. But it turns out, to many folks' surprise, that some of the ingredients in sunscreen can harm that which we hold dear, the ocean and the reefs. And I'm sure you know how important reefs are to our ecosystem. I wanted to get more information about this so we can all know what we should do on our own, what sunscreens are best to protect our environment. But also, there is legislation pending before our state legislature that will ban certain ingredients in sunscreen in the state, so I want to know more about that. Today we have two folks to talk with us. First, we need to understand the science behind all this. Dr. Craig Downs is director of the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory, a nonprofit scientific organization in Virginia. Dr. Downs got his PhD from John A. Burns School of Medicine here in Hawaii in molecular and cellular biology and was a professor at UH Manoa in the Office of Public Health Studies. Good morning. Aloha, Dr. Downs.
Good morning.
We're also joined by one of this island's main ocean advocates, Rick Gaffney, who's out at Honokahau Harbor at Pacific Boat Sales. Rick was born and raised in Honolulu and has been an advocate for ocean and reef health for decades. He's done master planning for ocean recreation and for marine protected areas. Rick is well published in articles all about the ocean, fish, reefs, coral, and more. And he's worked with state groups, environmental groups, and federal groups on ocean advocacy. And I'm sure that Rick's concerns have to do with basic environmental concerns, but also a look at the fact that this island, this state, attracts tourists and residents because of our great ocean, our great fishing, and they need to be kept viable. Good morning. Aloha, Rick.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you?
Good. I want to start, Rick, with you before we ask Dr. Downs about his research. Remind us, Rick Gaffney, why are reefs important?
Well, reefs are critical to the health of our community in many ways. They're also critical to the our primary economic generator in Hawaii, which is tourism. Statistics tell us that 80% of the visitors to the Hawaiian Islands participate in some form of ocean recreation. So if we didn't have healthy reefs, we wouldn't have a healthy tourism industry. It's that simple. But that's just the economic side of it. From an environmental perspective, the reefs are the rainforests of the sea. They produce the prey fish that our offshore species feed on. They basically do the same thing as the forests do in terms of keeping our environment healthy. And, of course, they are also the only protection that we have from tsunami and other major storms. So healthy reefs are absolutely critical to our community.
Dr. Downs, what prompted your desire to study the impact of sunscreen on coral reefs, if indeed that was your goal, to see how it impacted reefs? What were you thinking at the time you started all this work?
Well, we were tasked to understand why coral reefs were degrading in the Virgin Islands National Park in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And one of the bays that we were working on, Trunk Bay, has nothing in the watershed. It's just rainforest, you know, all the way to the peak of the watershed, and the only anthropogenic impacts or activity were swimmers. And we would get 2,000 to 5,000 swimmers a day at Trunk Bay. And it was a local who kind of keyed us in to the sunscreen because we couldn't figure out what could be causing. We did a full chemical analysis for heavy metals and petroleum products and PCBs, and nothing was showing up. It should be a clean reef, but the coral, if you were to wound a coral, it wouldn't heal. It wouldn't heal for 4 to 5 years. There were no new coral recruits coming in. There were no sea urchins coming in, while in other bays, there were sea urchins. And we discovered that it was sunscreen. And from there, we conducted 10 years worth of research in different parts of the world. Part of it was in Hawaii, and things kind of just exploded from there. And now we're to a point where we've discovered that sunscreen pollution in marine environments is a real phenomenon. And in many places, it poses an ecological threat to the conservation and even the restoration of marine habitats.
How did you actually do your research, your studies?
We combined what are called ecotoxicological methods with environmental forensic methods. So the environmental forensic part came first. We spent a lot of expertise and money trying to detect the chemicals that were in the water, in seawater, especially for what are called personal care product chemicals. And those include these SPF UV chemicals like oxybenzone, actinosate, octocrylene. And we detected these chemicals in these bays, like in Trunk Bay and in Kapalua Bay and Honolulu Bay. And we determined what the concentrations were. Some bays where there were just no swimmers, the levels were undetectable. In Hawaii, it really didn't matter where we sampled. We were finding in the low parts per trillion concentrations of oxybenzone all over the place. And in places where you would expect the concentrations to be high, where, you know, popular beaches and popular bays, they were really, really high. We just discovered, we did a survey with Senator Sparrow and Representative Ward at Hanama Bay, and we discovered the highest concentration was 30,000 parts per trillion.
And is that high?
That's very high, especially when you consider that corals exhibit toxicities to oxybenzone as low as 62 parts per trillion.
Oh, then 30,000 is a whole lot higher than 62. I can see what you mean by really high.
Yes, it kind of makes sense. Hanama Bay, City of Honolulu, has done a phenomenal job in reclaiming and pumping out the sewage that occurs there from visitors. And there really is no other anthropogenic impact in that bay except for human swimmers. Waikiki, I think in the baby pool area, we saw as high as, I think it was 11,000 parts per trillion. On the North Shore area, right after a big swim meet, when the waters were calm during the summer, I think it was 4,000 parts per trillion. Ahihi, a nature reserve over in Maui, levels were like 11,000 to 14,000 parts per trillion. So the concentrations can be really high, especially where there's swimmers. But we were finding all these residual or low-level concentrations in places where there aren't swimmers, and we think those are signals from sewage. And we know Hawaii has a huge sewage problem from cesspits and septic systems, and just being on a volcanic island that is incredibly permeable. So whatever comes out of us or on our skin, it's going to get in the water one way or another near shore where the reefs are. And that's kind of what we're seeing. It's just a large contamination of various concentrations on the populated areas of Hawaii.
Do you want to say something, Rick? You looked like you had something on your mind.
You know, Craig's mentioning places that have high concentrations of swimmers, snorkelers, and so forth, the obvious places where it would show up. My first concern after hearing one of Craig's lectures was Kailua Bay, because I immediately thought, Iron Man. We're talking 2,400 people probably swimming every day, a lot from European countries using a lot of protection. So the first thing I did after understanding that this was a problem, because I swim in Kailua Bay 3 days a week, so I've been watching it for 7 years now, and I saw the huge change that came with the climatic warming situation we had in 2014 and 2015, and the reef died back significantly. So if we're putting these chemicals in and preventing the reef from coming back by allowing people to use any kind of sunscreen they want, allowing people to basically shed these chemicals into Kailua Bay, we're damaging it. So fortunately, the first call I made was to Lava Man, because I know Jerry Rott very well. She immediately reached out to an organic sunscreen manufacturer on Maui and essentially produced a Lava Man sunscreen to be sure that she educated her people Iron Man, being a much bigger corporation, took a year longer to basically do it. But they're now telling people that are swimming in Connecticut not to wear sunscreens with these chemicals in them. So hopefully, by educating the community, conversations like this will get the word out that everybody needs to recognize that these chemicals are going to further hurt our already damaged reefs.
Well, I'm just really impressed. I did not know that Iron Man had switched its kind of sunscreen. Because, you know, when the Iron athletes and most athletes go into the water, they do slather up with sunscreen because nobody wants to get skin damage. And so, wow, that is very nice. Now, you spoke, Rick, though, of something that many have mentioned, which is we do have climate change, which is known to be damaging reefs. We do have sewage runoff. Dr. Downs, you mentioned that, and Rick, and we know that. How relevant is the sunscreen damage versus these other damages? Should we be dealing with these other damages, and is sunscreen just a minor part of this? Dr. Downs?
Okay, so in Hawaii, we really do need to deal with the sunscreen pollution because it's occurring where reefs matter most to humans. West coast of Maui, Hanama Bay, North Shore, climate change, sewage has an impact. Actually, sunscreen chemicals in sewage, that's a big consideration because you would not believe how high concentrations are of oxybenzone and actinisate are in sewage.
I only can agree with that because I've started paying attention now, and after I put sunscreen on, of course, the first thing I do is wash the palms of my hands so they're not greasy, and I thought, oh my gosh, right into the ground. So I've become much more aware of what I am doing and what I'm using, and once people get home, they shower, and then it goes right down the drain.
Yep, exactly. If you think about it, all the sunscreen that you put on your skin, it's going to wash off. It's either going to come off in the water when you're swimming, or it's going to come off in the shower. And all everything that you put on there, let's say you use half a bottle in a, you know, for a morning swim or an afternoon swim, that's in the ocean.
I want to ask you about specific ingredients, but are the harmful ingredients that you're going to tell me about, are they harmful to me as a person? Because clearly we ingest these a bit. They get on our lips, and so it's in our mouth. It's absorbed through our skin. Is it damaging me as a person?
The evidence is yes. In the last 8 weeks, a number of papers in the human health field have come out showing the association or the etiology of, for example, oxybenzone causing Hirschsprung's deformity in infants, in neonates.
What is that?
Hirschsprung's deformity is it's a disease found in newborn children where the large colon does not form correctly. It can be taken care of or cured surgically, but if it's not taken care of, what happens is that fecal matter does not pass out of the baby and it begins to build up and the child can die. It's a lethal phenomenon if not corrected. So that's just one aspect. A number of other studies have come out that are showing that there are changes in body weight, hormone levels in neonates and children. Girls that are exposed to high levels of oxybenzone during their prepubescent years develop breast at a later date. So there is a developmental delay in breast forming. In boys, there is a drop in testosterone level. It's an endocrine disruptor. It's an endocrine disruptor in wildlife. One of the most famous studies of oxybenzone is that it will turn male fish into females.
None of that sounds good.
It mimics estrogen. The U.S. FDA permitted its use back in the 1970s using really primitive test requirements. And in 2016, U.S. Congress passed a new act that requires increased toxicological assessments of proposed SPF UV chemicals. The 17 chemicals that were grandfathered in back in the 1970s, most of them would not pass the 2016 requirements.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I was thinking, well, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, should certainly have looked into all these. But then I did read, as you just mentioned, that they grandfathered in ingredients used in the late 70s when they decided to look at sunscreen safety. So is the FDA now changing? Are they now looking into the ingredients that they initially grandfathered in?
I can't speak for the FDA, so I don't know if they're looking into it. We made some requests. They haven't responded, so we have no idea what the FDA is doing. but other agencies like the National Institutes of Health have funded studies that look at outcomes of oxybenzone exposure in pregnant women and children. And those papers are just now coming out, and it does not look good at all. It looks really scary, actually.
Can we go through some specific ingredients that are very common in sunscreens, and you tell us whether they're harmful or sort of not harmful or really good?
Sure.
Okay. The one I have heard you mention, and the one seems to be in a lot of the sunscreens, is oxybenzone.
Oxybenzone, in my professional opinion, poses a threat to humans and to wildlife, especially at the concentrations that we're seeing it in the environment and that we're applying to ourselves in everyday lives. There was a CDC study showing that 99 or 98% of the U.S. population has oxybenzone in their blood or in their urine. So you're being exposed to it. It's not just in sunscreens. It's used in moisturizers, in lip balms, and other lip applicators. It's used in a number of different personal care products. They're not always obvious that it's in there. If it's in a sunscreen product, usually it's in the active ingredients and it says oxybenzone. But if it's in a non-SPF over-the-counter drug, industry will use the word benzophenone 3. So that's the other word for oxybenzone. You really got to look for it because the print on many of these bottles is so small you can't read them.
Oh, don't I know it. I had to get out a magnifying glass to look at what I use. Okay, I want to go through the rest of these fairly quickly to get through them all. Avobenzone.
There's not a lot of data on Avo or Avobenzone. There's nothing out there, so we really don't know what its toxicities are. We do know that it breaks down fairly quickly. It's an unstable UV stabilizer and requires other UV chemicals to be mixed in with it. But we do know there are some recent studies showing that the breakdown products of Avobenzone, especially in swimming pools, Avobenzone will react with chlorine and produce chemical byproducts, toxic byproducts.
Octisalite.
Octisalite, there's very, very little toxicology data on octisalite in the scientific literature or even in the NIH literature, the government monograph for the toxicity of this chemical. We just don't know.
Two ingredients that are in my sensitive skin sunscreen and also in my oil of Olay that I use, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide.
Those are two interesting chemicals. So, again, in my professional opinion, when you look at these two chemicals, they are very effective protectors against both UVA radiation and UVB radiation. And that's really kind of important because UVAs cause one type of damage to skin, and UVB causes a similar but different type of damage to skin. Many of the carbon-based SPF chemicals will predominantly protect against UVB radiation. They don't protect very well against UVA radiation. Oxybenzone will protect against UVA radiation, but not as well as zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. Now, the toxicities associated with zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, they are real, but it depends on the size of the particle. So nanoparticles, which defined by the US EPA as less than 100 nanometers in diameter, those particles can be very toxic. But above that, the larger you have, the less the toxicity.
And is there any way for me to know if I've got large particles or nanoparticles?
Usually if a bottle says non-nano zinc oxide, and this is something that we've been encouraging every sunscreen company that we come across, is to actually measure the particle size in their product. And if it's non-nano, say it. That's what the consumer wants to know. And we've been getting a lot of resistance from sunscreen companies. I think one reason is because they haven't tested it and they don't know and they don't want to say something that's untrue, which is quite reasonable. I think the other one is marketing. They've decided upon a particular marketing strategy, and it's not one that meets consumers' needs and inquiries.
How about octinoxate?
Octinoxate or octinoxate, depending on how you want to pronounce it, that, in my professional opinion, poses a threat to both human health and to wildlife health. It is an endocrine disruptor. There's evidence that it is a mutagen, meaning it causes DNA damage. And it's actually a more potent inducer of coral bleaching than oxybenzone. It will cause coral bleaching at lower concentrations than oxybenzone will.
Okay, homosalate.
There's not a lot of data on that chemical, so we just don't know.
And how about octocrylene? Octocrylene.
That is an interesting chemical. There is now, in the last 2-3 years, some good toxicological data coming out and some good environmental survey data. So what are the concentrations of octocrylene in the environment? They find octocrylene in many of the waters in Hawaii as well as in the Caribbean. But like oxybenzone and octinisate, we also detected in organisms that exist in those marine environments, like fish, coral, seaweed. There is a study coming out by a scientist in Maryland showing that there are high concentrations of octocrylene in crayfish in the streams and rivers of Maryland, and they're getting it from sewage. Sewage is a major source of pollution, and they're just absorbing it because sewage is being dumped in those rivers and streams. So a number of different organisms can pick it up. Even the Portuguese and Spanish ministries of fisheries, they did a study of commercial consumable fish and discovered extremely high levels of octocrylene, higher than oxybenzone.
Clearly, you're not advocating for people to get skin cancer, and even for folks who wear long-sleeve shirts and such when they go out in the ocean or play tennis or whatever, there are still parts of the body that will be exposed. So tell us what ingredients will protect us from sun damage and skin cancers and still be environmentally safe, or alternatively, if you know of brands, because I know it's not realistic to think people are not going to use sunscreen.
What I recommend is what the Centers for Disease Control recommend and the Melanoma Foundation. The first line of defense for sun protection is clothing, sunwear clothing. So if you can wear a shirt, if you can wear a hat, if you can wear trunks, you can reduce the amount of sunscreen that you need to apply by over 50%.
Of course, then there's the back of my neck and my face and my hands, even when I do all that.
So that's great. Use sunscreen. And use it as it's directed. It's my professional speculation that one of the major causes for this increase of melanoma is this phenomenon called sunscreen abuse. People put on sunscreen once, or they'll lightly apply it once and not do it for another 2 or 3 hours, thinking that they're protected, and they shouldn't do that. They need to amply apply sunscreen to the areas of skin where you need the protection, and realistically reapply every 45 to 80 minutes. And people don't do that.
Are there specific ingredients, though, that we should be seeking, or specific brands that you know of?
I think non-nanotized zinc oxide and non-nanotized titanium dioxide are probably going to be the safest, both for wildlife and for you, because the non-nano zinc oxide and the non-nano titanium dioxide don't penetrate through your skin. Oxybenzone, 30 minutes after you apply oxybenzone sunscreen to your skin, we can detect it in your urine. There was one scientific study that looked at farmers in California, and they detected it within 20 minutes of applying to their skin. So zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, there's no skin penetrance. You're safe from those two chemicals as long as they're non-nano. And from an environmental perspective, we can put 1 part per million large particles of zinc oxide and have fish swim around in it, and we don't see anything. You know, if it's non-nanotized, if it's like 1 micron or 10 micron in size. The larger zinc oxide particles, most people don't like them because it goes on white, and if you have dark skin like me, you kind of look purplish. You know, that's kind of the trade-off. But there are smaller, non-nano, but smaller zinc oxide products that people can find and use, or tinted zinc oxide. So they add iron oxide or other type of tints to mitigate or remove that white or purplish hue that some of the zinc oxide or titanium dioxide sunscreen products impart onto your skin.
I'm hearkening back to the days of my youth when people would put zinc oxide on their nose, or their mom or dad would, to keep them from getting sunburned. Rick Gaffney, I know that I have seen from you a list of sunscreens that are considered environmentally safe. Tell us where we find that.
There's an organization called the Environmental Working Group, and they have a website, ewg.org, and you can check on the environmental safety of many, many, many products, not just sunscreens. But there is a sunscreen section. I think last time I looked at it, there were about 253 different sunscreens that they believe to be environmentally healthy and not detrimental to the environment. So that's a good place to start.
And are they effective, though, in protecting against UVA and UVB?
Yes. Yeah. And everything that Craig's talked about are considerations in their analysis as well. So I think one of the much simpler point, the first time I ever became aware of the impact of sunscreens on the ocean was I started taking charters to Molokini back in the 70s, and oftentimes there'd be only four of us out there, and now there's literally thousands of people a day. There is a bathtub ring on the inside of Molokini Crater just from the oils in the sunscreens that people put on their body. Now, when those oils, mineral oils, go on top of the exposed corals and algae at low tide, they'll kill them. So places like Kahalu on this island and Kealakekua Bay are not just being affected by these noxious chemicals, they're being affected by the very base mineral oils in a lot of these sunscreens. So the idea of going to clothing to protect you should be the first line of defense. And there really is an impressive amount of new clothing coming out. You'll see fishermen offshore wearing gaiters basically on their faces or complete face protection and hats with large brims and protection down the back. When I fly fish, I wear thin gloves because the backs of my hands were always horribly burned and I didn't want that greasy sunblock on there. So there are a lot of ways. You'll see swimmers in Kailua Bay now fully covered while they're swimming. So it is possible to basically avoid sunscreens altogether.
Rick, although I want to know about pending legislation, I feel like this is something that we should just do as the right thing to do to protect the environment in which we live. But tell us about the legislation in the state.
Yeah, I agree that people should just do it because it's the right thing to do. The pending legislation is focused on sunscreens that contain the two chemicals, oxybenzone and octinoxate. At the start of this legislation, there were basically 22 different pieces of legislation that included some bills passed forward from last year and some new bills. And that's always, as is often the case with our legislature, that's very confusing for the consumer. It's also very confusing for our legislators. So that was the beginning of the process. And that's now boiled down to the point where we are in the legislative session now is that any bills that are going to pass from one chamber to the other have to have been passed in the first chamber. And the bill that is left from all of those 22 at this point in time is Senate Bill SB 2571. Anybody that's interested in what it says can look it up on the legislative website, SB 2571. The preamble to that bill actually provides excellent scientific background, the names of these chemicals, what the basis of those chemicals are, and so forth, and also a description of why it's important to ban them. So essentially what this bill and the legislature's purpose this session is to ban sunscreens containing those two noxious chemicals. At this point, the bill has been forwarded from the Senate to the House, and it's going to be considered in the committee that our representative Nicole Lowen is vice chair of. So that's good because she has been a strong supporter of sunscreen bans. Actually, she brought Dr. Downs to Kona to talk to the citizens of this community, and that's where I first met Craig and became even more motivated to see something done. So people that are interested in seeing this pass should reach out to Nicole and also her committee chair, and that committee is Representative Chris Lee, who has a strong environmental record. And then from there, it will also go to the Finance Committee. We don't have any West Hawaii representatives on the Finance Committee, but I've also talked to other legislators just more broadly, environmentally oriented people like Representative Cynthia Thielen, and I'm hearing a lot of broad-based support and bipartisan support. She's a Republican, for the passage of this bill this session. Actually, the chair of the Hawaii Democratic Party said it was a priority for the party this session to pass this legislation.
When would the legislation likely go into effect?
That's a good question. At the current time, there is a long outdate. I think it's 2063, when many of us will be long gone. But typically in the legislature, that date is put in there just for discussion purposes. Our goal, those of us that have been following these bills and testifying on them, is to get these bills in place by 2019. So ideally, the ban would go into place by 2019, and we would no longer be able to purchase products with these chemicals in them after that time. Whether or not we get there is still an open question, but we know from people in the pharmaceutical industry that it doesn't take a long time for sunscreen companies to create new products. So there really isn't much of an argument for them to say, oh, well, we need 5 years to be able to come up with a new product, when we know for a fact that they can do that in a very short period of time. And then, of course, a lot of the good sunscreens are actually being made locally and organically. There are a number of products. I mentioned the Maui one that Lava Man's using. There are a number of products currently available in dive shops and other places which are made in Hawaii. So that's a dream situation, to be able to buy a environmentally sensitive, locally made product and actually avoiding these big pharma, essentially, the big pharmaceutical companies.
What else should we talk about before we say aloha, Dr. Craig Downs?
I think besides legislation and then the manufacturers, the other big issue are the distributors. From Costco to Walmart to ABC stores, most of the sunscreen that's used in Hawaii isn't brought along with the tourists. It's purchased at these stores. If you go into an ABC store, the front and center aisle when you walk in is the sunscreen tower. When I was in Kona back in November, 80 to 90% of the products on that shelf had oxybenzone and or actinisate in them. And these are the really cheap aerosol spray sunscreens that don't get on the skin, that go all over the place. They're actually not very effective and quite noxious environmentally. And so getting stores to provide better products for consumers to use would be great, because there wasn't really much there for zinc oxide or organic or any of the diverse sunscreen products that are out there. It was basically three companies. I think it was Hawaiian Tropic and Copper Tone. And we know that those companies sell zinc oxide only, or titanium / zinc oxide only sunscreen products. They make them. And so they could be selling them. One idea would be is that when you walk into the store, all you have are environmentally safer sunscreen products. All the sunscreen companies make these. And if they do want to sell oxybenzone sunscreen products, put them in the back. A product that has an SPF 30 value or SPF 50 value, it doesn't matter what the ingredients are, it has to have that SPF value according to the FDA. So is it an effective sunscreen protector? Well, yes it is, because it has that SPF rating on it.
Rick Gaffney, what else should we talk about before we say aloha?
Craig makes a very good point about distributors and retailers. I think it's important to note that we're having some success locally. Costco is listening. Costco now has an organic product, Alba, available in all their stores in Hawaii. Of course, a lot of the smaller retailers, the dive shops and so forth, have understood this issue for a really long time. So they make it a point to read the ingredients and tell the distributors that they don't want anything else in their store. So you can go into Jack's Diving Locker or Big Island Divers or any of those stores and get these products. And increasingly, as these local retailers are hearing from consumers, they are looking for these alternative products. There's also people look for local products. So the production of local products is starting to win over these retailers as well. So I think there's good news on that front, but we need to keep the pressure on.
No question about that. And I also want to remind folks that when you read an opinion piece about this or any other subject, you really need to look at who the author is. There was an opinion piece in the Star Advertiser on the 28th of February about this sunscreen legislation, and the writer portrayed himself as a father, scientist, and resident of the beach, and basically was saying this legislation was bad and we need to really deal more with things like pollution and sewage and climate change. Well, when I looked up the author, I found out he may live on the beach, but he lives in Washington, D.C. He's with the Consumer Healthcare Products Association, a lobbying group. So he obviously had an unexpressed vested interest. And so we as consumers need to look at legislation, look at op-eds, pay attention, and do the right thing ourselves. Craig Downs, anything else before we say aloha?
I think we covered all the topics. The only thing I probably also want to cover is a big mahalo to Hawaii resorts. One of the coolest things about this entire experience is how many resorts have stepped up and have educated their guests and even provided free sunscreen to their guests. Quite a few of them have stepped up and really put the message in front of tourists. I think this was an unexpected and major big win for coral reef conservation. And the resorts only win from this, because if the reefs are good, it means you're going to have guests coming back year after year. So it's in their best interest. I was really surprised and really happy how many of the resorts in Hawaii have stepped up and taken a big leadership role in trying to mitigate sunscreen pollution in Hawaii.
Thank you, Dr. Craig Downs from Hereticus Laboratory, for being with us today by phone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Rick Gaffney, anything else before we say aloha?
No, I'm glad that Craig brought up the issue of the resorts. I'm very impressed that Aqua Aston is actually running an advertisement on the 6 o'clock news and has been for a month, as best I can tell, specifically advocating that people stop using these products. So again, local companies are coming, but we have to be vigilant. We have to understand the issue. We have to read the small print if we're to protect our reefs. And without our reefs, we are nothing. We don't eat. We're not protected from storms. We're not regenerating. It's absolutely critically important. And sunscreen is something we can do. Removing oxybenzone and octinoxate from our environment is something we can do. We can't stop global warming, but we can take care of this at home.
Good point. Thank you so much, Rick Gaffney, for being with us. Aloha.
Thank you, Sherry.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for being with us. This is Island Issues. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. I will see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.